I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, Señor Nicolás Hodge, who's also an investor, of course, and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. This is the 330th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk gold, we're going to talk silver, we're going to talk crypto, Ghislaine Maxwell, crybabies in the market, rate cuts, and PPI numbers, along with a bunch of other stuff. But before we get to it, first and foremost, Señor Hodge, how goes you? How are you? How is your beautiful family?
Everybody's great. The in-laws are in town, which means grandparents are in town. So the kids are happy. They're swimming. They're taking walks around the property. They're racing boats on my pond, which you would call a lake, Gerardo, although you have a lazy river, so you shouldn't know what to talk.
But I'm a city kid. I don't know what to call these things.
Everybody's good. Enjoying these last couple of weeks of summer. I know that school is starting some places across the country, and we'll be getting there the first week of September. Beaver Creek coming up. Markets are cranking. Politicians are supporting the sectors in which we're involved. Lots of awesome things in the market, and lots of not awesome things outside the market. I'm doing great. How are you?
I am well. Had the good fortune of being able to celebrate my wife's birthday here yesterday. We spent the weekend in Vail and Beaver Creek. Was nice to be there for a celebration as opposed to work. And so, look, thankful. She had a beautiful birthday. We had a beautiful weekend. My brother, his husband, they all came down. The kids came out. Was a really good time. But as always, as you know me, after 2 or 3 days of markets being closed and being in the mountains and doing all the hiking, I'm ready to get back to it. So excited to be back in office this week. And look, it's a wonky time in the markets. We had a PPI number along with the CPI number. And just for those that, don't keep track of these things, that's the producer's price index, basically a measure, a very rigged measure, but a measure of the price of things. And so that came in about 4.5 times higher than expected at 0.9%. The consensus was that it would come in at around 0.2%. And look, when you start factoring in energy and food and some of the inputs that they don't take into consideration, that number is much, much higher. And despite that, you so wittily, we chatted off air briefly, but you so insightfully cited the fact that, when you go look at the betting odds, they're still pricing in a 90% chance of a rate cut in September, with some Fed governors now asking for not just a rate cut, but a 50 basis point rate cut. So, yeah,
the double dutch.
So, again, the stock market, folks, is not the real world, and the economy is not the stock market, but there's definitely bifurcation there. And it goes back to, I think, the theme that we touched on last week: be an asset owner, people, because if not, I said it last week, you're going to get your ass handed to you. Inflation is here to stay. It will be sticky. It won't be, what was the word that Mr. Powell likes to use? Transitory, as like Jerome would say. So thoughts on the overall market, thoughts on the PPI number coming in as hot as it did.
That was years ago that inflation was supposed to be transitory. Gerardo, the Costco just increased my membership rate by 8% on the year, and the New York Times raised their subscription rate again for the second time in 2 years at a rate that's much higher than 2 or 2.5%. I would let you know, and I know you just talked to Mr. Rule the other day, Rick Rule, and had an interview with him. And I was talking to him at his conference recently in Boca and on some other calls that we've been having. And he said he's done a personal analysis, and his personal rate of inflation on the things that he and his wife consume and buy on an annual basis is up something like 8 to 9%. The stock market hit all-time highs this week. Crypto hit all-time highs this week. Gold futures hit all-time highs last week. And yet, we need a fucking rate cut, Gerardo. I don't know if you knew that. There's people out there crying for it.
We need several. We need more than one. We need two. Big cuts. The biggest. As big as my hands.
Especially, and he's the one that appointed. Trump is the one that appointed Powell. I'll continue to remind people of that. Continue to remind you that he signed the checks that kicked all this off on the advent of COVID. People in his administration are being increasingly vocal, especially Bill Poult or Bill Polte, however you say that. I'm not the best at pronouncing names, but this is the guy who's now in charge of housing. And he's a Trump sycophant, plain and simple. I mean, he tweets about how good of a leader this guy is. I mean, he might as well just have his nose right in his ass crack, right? And he's really rubbed me the wrong way recently, tweeting about, you know, the need for a rate cut and demanding a rate cut. And you can clearly tell that he and others, you know, some of their livelihoods and the things they do, Paul Holmes, for example, are obviously
rates. More guy who builds houses wants cheaper rates for consumers to purchase homes.
Exactly. And they're instituting other things that we've discussed on this podcast. And that, you know, I'm going to deviate a little bit on this answer because we told you that, you know, crypto was coming for mortgages. I mentioned that a month ago. Yep. And Bill Pult was giving conference calls this week with hundreds or thousands of mortgage agents on them talking about, you know, that this is coming, right? They're going to make it easier for you to use crypto assets, pay with crypto assets, stable coins come into this. We've talked about Tether. We've talked about Tether investing in gold royalty companies. We've talked about the genius bill. Chris Curl and I, a couple of weeks ago, talked about Circle being the second largest issuer of stable coins and how these payments were going to start getting processed on the back of layer ones, et cetera. I know we're going to talk more about crypto, but I'm getting a little off topic here. And back
no, it's
to
actually
Bill
very on topic. It's one big circle jerk is basically
That's
what
correct.
You're saying, right?
So back to Bill Pult begging for a rate cut and Trump wanting, to replace Powell, essentially Pult demanding that Powell step down on a daily basis on Twitter. It's all a lot of nonsense. And so, you know, the takeaway is that it's sort of as you led with it. Inflation is pinned up high at 2.7 or 2.8% on an annualized basis. And that's not anywhere close to the 2% target. And they still want a rate cut at a time when the jobs market is relatively okay, despite that revision from a couple of weeks ago. As I said, the stock market's okay. Yields aren't all that high. No, if you look at the 2-year, you look at the 10-year, it's come way down from being close to that, you know, 5%, 4%. Exactly. So things are okay out there. I'm starting to wander. So I'll wrap up. But yeah, global markets look okay. Gold is trading in range between, yeah, call it, you know, I don't know, 3275 and 3400. Silver's doing a bit of consolidation, and you know, this is the point in the cycle where you know what you own. You use dips to buy the things that have been going up in the metal space, yeah, and you look forward to drill results and conferences in the fall.
Yeah, no, let's talk drill results and conferences in the fall, because this is likely to be, for me personally and for subscribers, the most consequential September, October, maybe in my entire career. And what I mean by that is I've been really vocal. And I love this part, right? I like when the first shot goes off or the first punch is thrown, like, let's get to it if we're going to get to it. In this case, the get to it is I've been very vocal that I love seeing value created with the exploration companies. It's the highest risk portion of the sector that I dabble in, the resource space. It's also the highest reward. And fortunately for myself and friends and family and, you know, a lot of subscribers, we've done relatively well, even during very, very tough years. Have we had misses? Absolutely. Will we have more? Absolutely. Nature of the beast. But overall, when you look at core picks or picks that, you know, we've really gotten behind at a very early stage, whether it's the Patriot Battery Metals or the Q2 Metals or a Southern Cross Gold, or I can continue, UEC some 6-7 years ago, we're up 700% on UEC in the portfolio, right? By just buying it and holding it and not caring what was happening in the moment and in the in-between. And so I say all that to say, look, I'll give you all the freebies. I've been yelling my behind off about Hannon and Kingsman. And another company that subscribers know about that I'm not going to say right now because we're going to do a promotion on it and I don't want to give it away, but I have very, very, very vested interest in seeing all three of those companies succeed. And two are drilling. One will start drilling next week in September. Well, heck, in August, we'll start seeing results from Hannon. In September, we'll get more results from Hannon. We'll get results from Kingsman, I suspect. And those are very consequential drill programs for the fact that we own a lot of it. We have warrants in several of those companies still, and it's game time. It's go time. And so we're going to see if they got the goods, but if they have the goods, as I suspect they will, and hopefully that happens early on in the drill program, then it's off to the races, and it's going to be off to the races for several years. And I'm thankful and a bit proud that we positioned ourselves and our family and our subscribers really early. We got into Kingsman at, I want to say like 8 cents or something like that, right? And then they did another financing, I think it's 16 cents that I recommended that. We let subscribers of PPI participate there, hand in 15 cents, 25 cents, 35 cents. So yeah, we're up quite a bit on those companies already, but y'all ain't seen nothing yet of those drill results come back and then they show any kind of continuity and grade and scale to be had. So no, very, 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 very consequential fall coming up September and October with conference season kicking off at Beaver Creek, Beaver Creek Precious Metal Summit and the Denver Gold Forum. I expect a lot of M&A. I expect a lot of action. I know we're going to be increasingly busy. Yeah, couldn't be happier. Sorry for the rant, but I'm excited.
No, that's a good one. I am too highly anticipating these drill results from companies you mentioned and additional ones. You know, I listen to the interviews you do on Resource Stock Digest. I'm invested in a lot of those companies, and whether it's porphyries in BC or copper, gold, silver targets in Wisconsin, or you know, whatever it is, we got a lot of drill programs out there that either haven't been drilled before or haven't been drilled in like 100 and some years, etc. And we're at the point now where obviously these companies are getting rewarded for good news. I mean, I feel like a broken record, but you know, we just went through earnings of the gold producers. Yeah. GDX is breaking out at decade and a half highs. GDXJ is breaking out, and so this good news is I'm going to be rewarded with the gold price pinned up as high as it is, and so I'm excited about the fall as well. I own a lot of the same stocks that you do, have warrants in a lot of them as well, and you know, we financed a lot of companies, not a lot, I shouldn't say that, but we financed a handful of companies earlier this year, and I feel like we have good positions. Like, I'm not doing a lot of hunting for new plays. When I look at my warrant portfolio, I see, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars that need to be spent to exercise those warrants in the next 12 to 24 months, right? So it's consequential for me as well, consequential for subscribers. We obviously eat our own cooking, and the things we recommend are related to the opportunities that we see and that we're taking advantage of for ourselves. And so hopefully things are a lot higher in a month or in 6 weeks than they are now, and they're already doing pretty darn well if you look at your portfolios and my portfolios, both personally and in the newsletters that we publish, and I would add in the premium portfolio picks that we give here. So I was writing a little letter yesterday inviting people to subscribe to the premium portion of this podcast, and I was just looking at the companies and things we've mentioned in the premium portfolio picks the past 2 weeks. You know, I identified it was like five or six plays or picks that are up 20 to 40% like in the past 2 weeks.
Easy.
I mean, Chris Curl and I were discussing Ethereum. He was going into layer one blockchains. I think I'm up 80% on Ethereum in like 4 or 5 weeks in foundational profits. So you guys are getting these picks for $2 an episode if you subscribe to the paid portion. So I was saying that it's no replacement for your letters or my letters, but it's one, a good way to get introduced to the topics, themes, and companies that we like and invest in. And two, it's a perfect complement or supplement to the premium research that we do publish in those letters, either to you know, hear it from the horse's mouth between the monthly issues, or just to stay up on a weekly basis with how we're viewing the markets. And so, shameless plug as I do on the free portion of the podcast, but even if you just listen to the premium portfolio picks the past couple of weeks, you've done quite well. And I expect that to continue as we head to the fall.
No, I do as well. And, you know, there's several we'll talk about in the premium portion of this podcast, because I don't want to give them all away. But I do want to touch on a couple of those names that we've been shouting out here over the last 3 to 4 weeks, because they're really starting to ramp. And again, they're doing so in anticipation of good news, in anticipation of those, you know, September results. And be absolutely clear, folks, like a lot of these companies that are drilling, even if they have good results, they're likely to sit on them until early September, right around, you know, the Labor Day and right around conference season, for the simple fact that there's a better reception. I happen to think this year that's a bit of a mistake. I think if you have one great hole and you kind of have an idea that the rest are going to be great, you
put it up,
put it out. And so that would be my advice to CEOs out there that are sitting on on good news. Now, if you don't have good news, then yeah, wait till you get a better, more clearer picture of why you don't have good news. See what you learn from that and see how you can apply and put that all together. But if you get yourself a hole that proves the concept and all the holes look the same, get the damn news out, get it out, expedite those assays, right? So that's my plea to CEOs of junior mining companies that are sitting on good news. What worked during bear markets isn't necessary for bull markets. And we absolutely have a bull market. You and I had a meeting with the fine folks at the Beaver Creek Precious Metals Conference earlier today. And, you know, I jokingly and seriously, but jokingly offered to interview them in exchange for letting us go in there and do what we do, which we've been doing for nearly a decade. And, you know, they said, Gerardo, we're so busy right now that the last thing we want to do is actually publicize any more of what we're doing, because we are having to turn people away and having to say no to a lot of people. And you know, people don't like it, but we only have so much capacity. We have a fire code to adhere to. And so completely get it, understand it, and respect it. But man, what a difference that from 5 years ago when I would get the invitation, you know, 7 months in advance, 6 months in advance. And, you know, this time we had to reach out a couple of times just to make sure that we were going to be allowed in. And so thank you all for letting us in, and looking forward to getting out there and looking forward to catching up with a lot of clients and hearing the news straight from the horse's mouth and reporting back to you all as well.
Yeah, I think they expect record or near record attendance. And the barometer or the anecdote I use is every year as we approach this bull market, I had to book our room earlier and earlier. I think I booked our room in April this year for a September conference, and I still didn't get the choice of room that I wanted, right? So what is that? 9 minus, you know, that's 5-6 months ahead of time. And the anticipation was building for not only this conference, but this market this year. And so excited to be in the thick of it, and excited to be there in a couple of weeks.
I thought you were going to use the lazy river analogy that everybody's running around with. And I was like, wow, here we go.
In good times.
No. Look, jokes aside, I'm excited to get to the premium portion of this podcast here in just a bit. And we will do so because there's a lot of stock talk and a lot of updates that I want to make sure we're providing our listeners and viewers that take time out of their busy lives to come and listen to me rant and you pontificate. So I do want to say this, the tariffs, we didn't touch on that in our little macro take. The tariffs are real, and just be absolutely clear, folks, regardless of what you feel politically, or, you know, whether you think Trump is playing 4-dimensional chess or 8-dimensional chess or however many dimensions the Trump supporters are up to now, the tariffs are very, very consequential for companies, and it's being paid by us, the taxpayers, Americans, right? And John Deere is a perfect example of that. They just reported earnings, and John Deere estimates that the pre-tax impact of tariffs for the fiscal 2025 year will reach $600 million. So when you hear the administration say, you know, it's China or it's Mexico or it's Canada or it's all these companies are paying us all this money, it's all coming in, that's not the way tariffs work, folks. And so however you feel about the politics of it, it's a stupid policy. The way that it's being rolled out, and it's affecting certain companies in certain sectors more than others. Now, stupid policy aside, brilliant policy is also happening simultaneously. And I wish the people that are advising the critical minerals portion of his policy would advise him on some of the tariff stuff, right? Because if you could just, there's actually a really good opportunity to have a really booming economy if they just got together and did things correctly. It's beyond me why they refused. But on the critical metal side, look, the administration just awarded $1 billion of our tax money to expedite the development and advancement of critical metals in the United States. I applaud that move. I think that's a brilliant move, despite the fact that it's going to come from our checkbook, despite the fact that we're going to be the people that pony up the money, right? They don't just print it. I mean, they do, but then they put it on the deficit and we're eventually going to have to pay that down, or they're going to inflate their way out of it. So that part, I think, has been brilliant. I think he's been spot on. He's been spot on the uranium side of things. It's stupid, and there's some stuff that's brilliant, and that's 2025 bingo card, right? A whole lot of both right now.
Well, yeah, I think it's part of the strategy of shock and awe, which we didn't succeed with in the Middle East all those years ago. Yeah. But you know, he tries to, and he did, they've been pretty transparent about this, you know, the part of the strategy is to just flood the news, flood the headlines, flood your brain with, you know, so many things that you can't keep up, and then circle back on the ones that they think are going to work and double down on them. Obviously, some of it hasn't gone according to plan. We've had multiple extensions. You know, Trump is getting called a taco. You know, Trump always chickens out. All that sort of stuff has emerged. But yeah, as far as the tariffs, obviously companies are feeling the impact. They continue to mention them on earnings calls, et cetera. We see them passing on the cost to consumers is the one thing I didn't hear coming out of your mouth. I mean, that's, you know, some of the companies are saying that, and they're not only passing on the cost, they're passing on the cost plus, right? So, your things, you know, that you bought in 2019 and 2020 are already more expensive, which we know they are. They're going to, get more expensive. And that's one of the reasons that you need to be an asset owner, right? All that stuff is sort of tied together. You mentioned the critical minerals component of his policy, which he's done a ton of stuff already that we've chronicled on here, from, you know, nuclear energy executive orders to fast track permitting, of which UEC was a beneficiary of recently, to the most recent announcement this week on August 13th of $1 billion for rare earth recycling, tailings recycling, battery manufacturing plants, gallium, all the things, right? All the hot buttons and rare and critical minerals that we talk about. And so, I agree with you. And that's sort of most politicians, right? There's some good and there's some bad. And, you know, my last word there would be stop being so partisan, and you'll be able to interpret it more clearly, right? If you are a partisan and everything Trump does has to be good, or conversely, everything Trump does has to be bad, well, then you're missing out on opportunities, and you're missing the forest for the trees, and you're not seeing clearly, right? Like, I saw some dumbass tweeting this morning, like, Trump is always on the golf course and Vance is always on vacation. Who's running the country while they're doing this? And it's like, do you remember the last fucking corpse that was running this country? Who do you think was running the country for the past 4 years? Like, come on, man. Let me extend that. Sorry. It's the same people that were. It's the Federal Reserve. It's the Council on Foreign Relations. It's the deep state bankers, etc. Like, who the fuck do you think is running the country? The same people that don't want to give you the Epstein files.
Yeah, let's talk about that. And funny, Rick Rule had a great tweet in response to that tweet that you just actually mentioned. He said, leave them on vacation. I prefer them when they're away because they actually do less harm, right? And to that, you know, we now have the deployment of the National Guard in DC streets. We're being told that that model can apply. And I'll be honest with you, from a historical perspective, I don't like it. From a practical perspective, if they can do it without violating people's rights and actually do it by the letter of the law, I'm not completely against it in areas that are out of control. We've all grown up in inner cities, Nick, where, you know, there's just certain areas where it's a hot summer and you can't go past certain streets without making sure that you have some kind of insurance or protection, right? And so if you're telling me that there's a lawful way, and the lawful is important to me, way to go in there and not strip people of the rights, just focus on the reduction of crime and cleaning places up in the right way, in the lawful way, I'm all for that part of it. Where it gets a little dicey for me is I have so little faith in government, you know, not taking the mile when they get an inch. And we've seen repeatedly with this administration, and Ghislaine Maxwell is a prime example of how there's two justice systems in this country and in the world, but in this country is where I live and where I care about the most right now. She gets work release as a sex trafficker for trafficking girls to apparently nobody, because nobody's been arrested. And what do you, I mean, I just don't understand how it's beyond me how they just do it right in front of people's faces. And yet you still have dumbasses tweeting about how amazing this guy is and how transparent, mm-hmm. how he's the law and order president, you know? And yeah, anyway, I'm getting on a rant, but yeah, it's
good.
It's so frustrating to see the two tiers of justice. And again, this is coming from someone that has access to good attorneys, that has access to, you know, all the things that come with making a comfortable living. And I just feel for those that don't, and I don't want to see people's rights get trampled on any more than they already have. I look at the way the immigration policy is being rolled out. I've been the biggest proponent of fixing the immigration system, putting a plan in place that's structured, that's transparent, that gets the criminals out. I haven't seen too much of that. I haven't seen very much targeting of the criminals. the rapist, the cartel members. I've seen quite the opposite. I've seen just, you know, a lot of people at Home Depot that maybe just don't have their legal working papers, or some that are in court to go get the legal working papers, stripped off the streets and sent God knows where. That's absolute bullshit. That's anti-American. That's not how our country was built. Do it the right way, and I'm all for it.
It's not just anti-American. It's unconstitutional.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when I look at how they've implemented other portions of their social policy, and I'm familiar with Stephen Miller and his beliefs, there's no part of me that has any faith that the National Guard marching down D.C. isn't going to lead to something that doesn't have to happen.
Look, I got a bunch of stuff to say about that. So let me see if I can go in order here. There's been a two-tier justice system for some time, right? Nobody was prosecuted for getting us into Iraq, for example, or for, you know, the collapse of Lehman Brothers and mortgage-backed securities and all that sort of stuff, right? Nobody was prosecuted. We bailed them out. Obama bailed them out. Let's be clear. Bush let us into the war. I mean, this is a quarter century now of a failed presidential policy from my perspective. And the two-tier justice system has continued to evolve, right? Whether you're talking about the reading of LIBOR years ago, all the way up to sort of insider trading recently. And I, you know, I would add one thing here is that it's now on both ends of the spectrum, right? So we talk a lot about the 10%, the top 1% and the 0.1%. Well, there's definitely a two-tier justice system for the 0.1%. What I'm increasingly seeing, and I didn't expect to broach this topic here, but I mentioned it a couple of times. I've talked about the homeless and then the homeless policy here in Spokane. I see some of those people sort of getting a pass on a lot of things that other members of society have to uphold and do, right? Like, I've talked about the camping ban that 75% of citizens wanted here in Spokane that we didn't do. And, you know, last Thursday, a homeless person stabbed a citizen in broad daylight on a pedestrian bridge in downtown Spokane, stabbed them to death multiple times. This is a person who was wanted by the state for assault, already had a warrant out for his arrest, was being sought after. And, you know, he was living in a tent in Spokane, which the citizens said they wanted to make illegal. So what I'm getting at here is the lowest among us and the highest among us are seemingly getting passes, while those in the middle, me and you, Gerardo, wherever you are, have to pay their taxes and have to obey the speed limit and have to do all the other things, right? Or else the speed camera is going to get us and send us a ticket, or the IRS is going to send us a letter. But if you assault somebody and you're wanted by the state, you can just live in a tent, sort of risk-free, right? And so that really pisses me off on both sides of the spectrum. I mentioned speeding cameras there. You know, maybe Trump is just going to put up telescreens in Washington, D.C. I mentioned 1984 a couple of times in recent podcasts, and I see his taking over of the D.C. police with the National Guard. Don't get me wrong. The crime is rampant in D.C. I am a product of Baltimore, where there's 30,000 boarded up homes and where The Wire was filmed, which I'm actually watching right now for the first time. And Wallace was just shot last night, but I'm familiar with roving gangs of dirt bikes and ATVs intimidating drivers on their way to work. I'm familiar with roving gangs of teenagers beating up people as they walk from their office to their parking spot in downtown Baltimore, and I'm aware that this occurs in D.C. as well. You can cite all the falling crime statistics you want.
Sure.
But those rates, even though falling, are still way too high, man.
Yeah.
And so I understand that there's a problem. What I'm not down with is trading liberty for safety, right? Facts. It's something I've warned about for a long time, whether it's terrorism or the militarization of police, etc. And so, you know, slippery slopes are slippery slopes. And then you hear that he wants to get the Smithsonian under a lens to make sure that the historical artifacts and museum adhere to
his
version of history. I can't help but think of Big Brother and ENGSOC, English socialism, and doublethink, and the words you're allowed to use, and how they eradicate words because And they don't want the people to have the words to describe those concepts because they want to either eradicate history or control history by having the power in the present. And so, you know, those warnings from that book all those years ago, as well as additional warnings that we've had in the past half century or century from presidents like Eisenhower, for example, we're still very much dealing with those threats and the consequences of your government folding to those threats, or in fact, being the ones behind those threats. And so it continues to be interesting times. It continues to be a bizarre world. And I continue to live on my 40 acres with a pond in Eastern Washington and try not to relate too much to that East Coast Beltway, because that's a wild fucking shit show over there.
There's a lot going on. That is a fact. Yeah. Let's get to the premium portion of the podcast. Unless you got anything else you want to get off your chest.
No, I got it all. I did. I made bullets while you were talking.
Look at you.
I got them all, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you all for coming out. Thank you for listening. Thank you for taking time. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 330th episode of our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great week, everyone. A lot to be excited about. Keep those fingers and toes crossed, and hopefully we're going to have ourselves a heck of a fall and a heck of a Christmas. Take care, folks.
See you.